have a problem every year around MLK Day because Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., for some reason, has been treated as America's civil rights mascot. On this day, you'll have folks who would have never in their life marched with, agreed with, voted with anything he believed in. One of the biggest in the United States Congress. He had the audacity to send out a Dr. King quote.
The march has begun. Every day we rise like the sun. We fight till the battle is won. Can you hear the footsteps? Listen, because we're coming like a gang on the street. So you better start running.
Hi and good evening. We're here live on another level. My name is Sharon Eaton Hinton. I am the producer and the host of this particular program. We're live right now. I don't know if I'm going to take any phone calls because my guest, this is not, he's not a rookie, he's not a novice. I love when he is on this show or any show because I love it when we learn what we know, what we think we know, what we don't know, when we elevate, which is on another level, when we bring what we think we know to another level. Tonight, we're going to be talking about UMass Boston and the fight to maintain an African presence in a department that's been fighting forever, as long as I've known. And so from his perspective, we're going to talk about the fight that is on college campuses now. And there are students at different universities, I'm not going to name them because I don't want to get sued, across the country who are staging protests on both sides of a specific issue around the Middle East and Israel and Hamas and all that, Ukraine and all that. I mean, college campuses are starting to be awakened, I feel. And then we're also gonna talk about a little bit about reparations and what that looks like in Massachusetts, in Boston, nationwide, and actually globally, because the UN is actually, the Secretary of the UN has actually made a statement about people of the diaspora, black people, African people, receiving reparations. So we're gonna be here live and popping on another level. Thank you for joining us. Stay tuned with a pen and a pencil because you need to write down this information. Stay tuned, stay with us.
Flying outside City Hall, people with offices inside the building are working on solutions for the city's black residents. Tonight in Roxbury, the mayor's task force on reparations announced the two research teams that will study Boston's role in the transatlantic slave trade and its long-term impact on descendants. A team from Tufts will research the period of time between 1620 and 1940. A team from Northeastern University will look at 1940 to the present.
The past will inform us because we have some good people, and that's what we want our researchers to bring forward.
The findings will eventually guide recommendations.
So it got cut kind of short, but you get the drift. Welcome back. My name is Sharon Eaton Hinton. I want to welcome my guest, the esteemed professor. I don't know if I should put King first, professor. See, Menelik, I mean, you've got so many names. Professor Tony Vandermeer is how people know you at UMass Boston, mm-hmm. but I know you as Menelik. Mm-hmm. And Menelik Musa was like the richest man in history. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like, you know, Menelik, because people are still trying to find out about him. But regardless, thank you for coming here this evening. Mm-hmm. It's never enough time to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And so we just saw that clip on reparations, but I want to start with UMass. You and Professor Jemadari, are you the only two that are fighting over there, over the department?
Well, first, thanks for having me again. it's actually three of us who are the only three full-time faculty members in the department. So it's Jemadari Kumar, Dr. Kumar, Dr. Keith Jones, and myself.
And so you're fighting, and the last time I think I saw you was when you guys were receiving an award and the provost didn't show up.
Well, the provost was there. The chancellor didn't
show up.
It was the chancellor's series, and he didn't show up. He did a video presentation,
that's right.
But he didn't, you know. But, you know. It's called respect. You know, what did Aretha Franklin say?
Well, R-E-S.
That's right.
P-E-C-T.
That's right.
Look at the niggatry. Yeah. But... And that's not part of the title, by the way. But when you look, and it was a different chancellor, Keith Motley.
Yes.
You guys were fighting then.
Yes.
That was a while ago.
Yes.
You guys are still fighting now. Thank God you're still there, and you were fighting before that.
Yeah.
And the fight is about what?
The fight is one about how a department should function. It's about shared governance, and it's about resources, and it's about respect. And so part of it is that, you know, they want a department, but they want to control it. And so the whole idea of Black history and the whole Black history and Africana studies, Black studies movement was for us to be able to control our ideas, you know, in terms of how we understand knowledge, and not from a Eurocentric perspective, but from an African-centric perspective in terms of our own origins and the origins of humanity.
So, okay. So I know, you know, that this department would not even exist if it wasn't for Black students.
Absolutely.
Black students and Black faculty decades ago.
Yes.
That I was at Northeastern University, the African American Institute. And so that would not have existed
if it
wasn't for students and faculty that got together. Same thing with UMass, same thing as across the country.
Right.
So it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like, you know, we knew what we needed, we fought for what we needed, and now people are saying, oh no, but we know better, so let's take over? Is that what's happening?
Well, it's fear, right? Because anytime you challenge racism and white supremacy, you know, folks are defensive because that's how they position themselves. That's their power base, that's the economic base. And so when you try to deal with the kind of structural changes as necessary, it threatens, you know, how they center themselves. But the question is that it's another issue of them accepting Black leadership.
Well, that's my point. It's like, so you and I have been in so many different situations where, you know, we initiate it, we develop it, we create it, we make it successful, and then all of a sudden somebody goes, no, that's okay,
they
take over from here.
Yeah, they pimp, they pleasurize, and co-op.
And is that's what's happening now?
Clearly, you know, so, and one way is that, so Dr. Jones and I participated and were recognized and honored for pushing the university to become an anti-racist, health-promoting university. And so
the university got accolades for that.
Exactly. And so they'll use that language depending on when and where, but don't include us in terms of the process of the ideas that we put forth and how to make that happen, right? And so it's almost like now they are, you know, running, but it's performative, it's not substantive, because we call for structural changes. When we did the Sankofa conversation on structural racism, it was to have a dialogue to look at what we need to do in order to change the conditions, in order to create a transformation and a cultural shift on our campus. They're not interested in that. They're interested in their power.
So you and I understand that in-out strategy, and trying to work from the inside and from the outside. And you need those opposing pressures to write something.
Right.
And they can't be weak, because then you don't have the balance, right?
Yes.
Moving
it
forward, Malcolm Martin.
Yeah.
You know, and when Martin, for those of you who don't know, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, when Martin Luther King was in jail, Malcolm sent it was a telegram. Either you deal with him or you will deal with me.
Yeah, right.
Is that same kind of back and forth and pressure happening?
Well, so this is what they do, not at the university but across the board, is that they try to deal with people they prefer to deal with, whether they're people that they need to deal with, but they also create divisions, right? And so we know that, you know, in our own families there are differences, and they take advantage of those particular differences around that. And so what's really happening is that, you know, they'll put Black people in positions in which they have to take messages from whoever is in control versus you having an independent voice and you're part of the shared governance structure, so they have to deal with you. So that, you know, across the board. So you find Black people in positions in high authority, but they don't have the kind of power to really shift the culture in ways that the culture need to be shifted in terms of to address issues of systemic and structural racism and issues around health promoting and equity. They're gonna cite what the board of directors and the highest echelons direct them to do. And the truth of the matter is that we should know that when we go in, that their jobs, what they could do is limited. But we have to create the pressure, you know, from the public, because UMass is a public institution. So the people can say, wait a minute, you know, this is not what we asked for, this is what we asked for. And so it's about organizing the people to be empowered.
So historically, you and I have been around long enough, but it happened before our lifetime and it's still happening.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the term is not correct. Sellout, or provocateur or saboteur.
Yes.
Or
that too.
All of that, right? Yeah. So how do we, because this is deja vu, been
yes.
here, done that.
Yes.
How do we bring forward those pressures in a time when there's so much lack of backbone?
Well, so the issue is, if you're trying to go forward, you got to keep your eyes on the prize. And we have to understand what the principal contradiction is. Even though we have internal contradictions, what are external contradictions? But what happens is that they'll have us fighting each other more so than fighting them. So it's we have to be more strategic.
But how do you bring those people around? So you and I both know that,
yeah.
right? And it's always been used. I mean, the first FBI agent, black FBI agent, was recruited to go against Marcus Garvey.
Exactly.
And then some of Malcolm X's security guard with CIA and police, right?
Yeah.
So when you look at, see, I'm Harriet.
Yeah, yeah.
You can stay on the plantation, or you can be free.
Right.
But if you come halfway in the swamp, we got to kill you. I'm like very clear about that. Like, you're not gonna, if you don't have, what she say, if you don't have enough courage, save your own skin.
Right.
And you know too much about the operation now, so we gotta take care of you.
But the situation is different in the sense that folks don't see the urgency of now that Harriet saw.
Then they
and the
gotta
conditions.
Go.
Right, but the issue is that we have to be more sophisticated on how that is viewed, because what happens is that they'll end up, see?
Humanize us. Yeah.
Right.
It's her fault. It's all her.
That's right. And the point is that we have to create the conditions. And the truth of the matter is that we also have to bring people along, right, who's hemming and hawing, right, because that's the contradictions that is not as great as the contradictions that exist with the people who have their foot on our necks. And we have to be very careful, because then that's what'll be on the news.
Get isolated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I hear you about that. So then my pushback is, I mean, those were the conditions that form the HBCUs that actually have graduated more scientists and lawyers and, you know, than the combination of Ivy League. So, and there's now a reverse migration of black people going back down south. They're like, you know, we fled racial terrorism during that time and came up north. We found out that, you know, there was Mississippi and there was Massissippi. So let's figure out what's going on.
Malcolm said anything south of the Canadian border is south.
And he wasn't wrong.
That's right.
And so we see this reverse down to states where the health conditions are worse, the economic conditions are worse, but there's more of us.
Yeah.
So we feel a sense of safety in a way.
Right.
It's sort of like soft, a false safety. But so is the answer to go back to like the Elijah Muhammad kind of separate and just self-determination, build ourselves up, or?
Well, so I want to say the question of, that's a debated piece. The question is, we have the right to self-determination, right? We have the right to sovereignty.
But if you look at it, right, on a real basic thing, like when I don't know about your mama, but when you're in your mama's house, it's mama's rules.
That's right.
Right now, the university is mama's house and it's their rules.
That's
so how do you get them to change that inside the house?
Yeah, so to the question
stop paying rent?
Right, well, the question is that, because the way that they framed separation was they made us the bad person. Like, this is a segregated society, and they've done that. But what we're saying is that this is the way that we want to live, and whoever want to live with us that way, we're down with it. But we have the right, you know, to have control of our destiny, right?
No matter where we are.
That's right. And so that's the real issue. But they frame it to be separation and so forth. And so, but, you know, and what Elijah was, I mean, you know, the way they saw the situation then is that, and it's true, we have to do for ourselves.
Right.
But the point is that we are universal people, and we work with who want to work with us.
That's
and,
true.
You see what I'm saying?
But I think that's part of the problem.
Yes.
When we don't want to work with each other and we want to work with everybody else.
Right. But that's part of the internalized oppression. Right.
Explain that.
Well, the point is that Malcolm asked a long time ago, who taught you to hate yourself?
Right.
Right. So we're looking at how we got where we got. That's a base of colonialism. That's a base of imperialism. That's a base of capitalism. That's the way of how we got from Africa to here. And then when we were here, you know, who controlled it and how they used other black people to be intermediaries so that we would be at fault and not the people who had the whip and who were white and who had the money.
And he also, during his lifetime, brought this issue to the UN. And yes. He saw it on a global level.
It's
a human rights issue.
Right.
It's not just, don't separate us and just say it's a Negro problem over in the U.S. because it is a human rights. And brought the whole concept of bringing Africa and Pan-Africanism to the global stage at the U.N. And then they killed him because he was really hitting it at the crux of the problem. And that was hitting the economics of it, too.
So one of the big things is that the problem with Africana studies, as we point out, is an epistemological project. It means is that it's based on, it's a project on how we know what we know.
Right.
But we look at it based on our experiences and that the geniuses of Africa and so forth and African people, because what happens in the white supremacy society we live in is that it's almost like that don't exist.
Right.
Right. And so, but we, our experience is different. And so we know different. So we don't have to know it the way they know it. Right. But that has to be acceptable in terms of how knowledge is constructed. And so when we do that, this is why they are banning books.
Oh, yeah.
And they're doing other kinds of things.
And the teaching. And
that's right. And so that you won't know what you know, because they're saying this is what you're supposed to know. Well, and you're supposed to know that you aren't relevant.
And if you know that and it hurts me, then you can't teach it. If it makes me feel bad about the fact that I'm connected, because this is you and I have been hearing it forever.
Yeah.
Well, my ancestors didn't have slaves.
Yeah.
So why should I pay for reparations? Yeah. And that was so long ago.
Yeah.
So what do you say to that argument?
Well, this nation is built on slavery. It is built on, you know, white supremacy and whiteness and white skin privilege. You know, I have to call out Ramona Eatlin's name because she passed away this year.
No.
Yes, and I went to her memorial service a couple of weeks ago in Washington, D.C. But she was the first chair of the Africana Studies, African-American Studies Department at Northeastern University, where we both went, right? I was one of the first students in that department when she started, you know, over 50 years ago, right? And so Ramona was beautiful in terms of her knowledge and so forth, but Ramona taught us well. And, you know, she started out with Du Bois and had us reading other kinds. We had, you know, professors, Sam Lake Sankangi from South Africa, you know, folks from Kenya. I mean, we were well prepared to understand who we are.
That's right. And why we got to
That's
be
right.
Here.
That's right. And to resist, and, you know, and with love. But, you know, don't bow down to these folks because who are they? And Malcolm X said, who are white people to be equal to? You see, so, and it's not about we hate anybody else.
No.
Right. But it says that, no, you don't treat me less than anybody
else. Dignity. That's right.
You know, and we have to learn to step. And so, and what's happening at UMass is they're trying to strip us of the respect we need and our dignity. And that's
in
when.
And the power.
That's right.
Because I think for a while now, they stripped the influence of you guys being able to even hire additional faculty in the department, right?
Well, they wouldn't let us participate. Right. And then, of course, they didn't want me. And I've been there for about 30 years.
Wow.
So how you gonna, it doesn't make any sense. And you know, and so just in terms of even teaching and service, and it's just it's the structure is I would say in one sense corrupt in terms of how they make those decisions.
Put that frame that in the national conversation that's anti DEI. First off, we let other people frame the terms of how they think we're going to fight.
Right.
You know, diversity, equity, inclusion. That we didn't come up with that.
No.
So, but now it gives certain people the terminology, the platform to be able to say, no, that's what we don't want. We knew, you know, no black need allowed, you know, a black people allowed.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, this. And so that's what that's saying, basically, right?
Yeah.
So is what's happening at UMass Boston becoming more difficult because of the fact that so many colleges and universities backed up by the Supreme Court are saying, you don't have to push this?
Well, what's happening at UMass and probably at other places as well is poor leadership.
From the top down?
From the chancellor to the provost.
No, is the chancellor's not of color, but he's not a
black. No. He's white.
Okay.
Right. But that somebody gave him a award saying he was one of 100 people of color. And I don't understand
that. That's what
that.
I thought.
I don't understand that. Mm. Right. But his actions and ways he does with it is based on how white supremacy functions.
Which is why he got promoted and he's the chancellor.
Right. So, but the point of it is that, you know, that what's happening is not just a local issue, it is a national issue in terms of how they're dealing with black people and dealing with the black studies departments and Africana studies department and so forth. And that we have to, you know, realize that. But a real issue is that it's a threat. It's a threat to the order of things. And so, you know, when you realize that you aren't being treated equitably and with dignity and respect, right, and you get less than what everybody else get, then there has to be some changes.
So how do you, okay, I've seen the flyers, you guys have had teach-ins, you guys have had demonstrations. Is there a lawsuit?
Well, we filed with the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination.
Ah.
All three of us, right.
So is it a class action suit?
Well, it's not a class action suit, it's just an MCAD suit that's basically, you know, dealing with racial discrimination, ageism, and the whole, you know, retaliation and everything else, right? And it's clear of what they're doing, you know, but so we're going to go through that investigation and see what happens. We also have an issue internally with the union on unfair labor practices around retaliation. And so we have two operating pieces. One has more teeth than the other, right? But what happens is that you got to go through a process with MCAD in order to go through, you know, a civil court, which is the next step.
So does Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, so does EEOC federal come in that play too?
Well, yeah, well, you have a choice.
That's and right, either or.
That's right, you know, and so.
And one is slower than the other because EEOC is federal.
Yeah, but what they're doing is this, because they use the law, the apparatus to frustrate you and extend it. But you know, even if they had to push me in a wheelchair, I'll be there because they got to deal with justice, and you gotta show them. You have to say like, I'm not the one.
So how do we support you?
Well, one is they should be calling the president of the university system, Marty Meehan. They should be calling the governor and saying.
And Marty Meehan was a state rep, wasn't he?
No, he was a congressman.
Congressman.
He's a congressman
was
in Lowell, right. But he's a president, but it's his shop, right? And ask him, like, what's going on? But they're, like, he's the state of the university and, you know, how things are wonderful and diverse. You know, it's performative. But what's really happening, right? And so in the governor, what's really happening?
Now,
and it's
asked,
also, to your point, it's also the black people who in these positions, for them to say what's happening, you know, who are politicians, who are, you know, people who have, you know, respect in terms of, the, you know, professional respect in those circles, to begin to lean on the governor and says, this is not good. And it's going to get worse before it gets better because all of those receipts we have is going to come out.
So now, UMass Boston is what, one of five in the UMass
yes.
Boston system?
That's
UMass
right.
Amherst, UMass Lowell,
right.
UMass Boston, which
right.
one am I missing?
Yeah, Dartmouth.
Dartmouth.
Mm-hmm.
And so is this happening across the UMass system or is it focused in Boston?
Well, what's happening with us is here, but I can also say that there are things that's buried all over.
Ah.
And a lot of times people don't know how to do it. They're scared to do it. Right. And then when it happens, they try to keep it always internal. So what's happening now is a sort of internal process, particularly with the union, which is around unfair labor practices. Right. And so even though what they've done is unfair, the only thing they could do is say, like, they put a disciplinary charge in my file. They have to take it out. That's not justice.
No.
Right.
Because you've been harmed. So
that's
how
right.
do you redress that?
That's right. Right. So then we have to take it to another venue. Right, you know, but the point is that hopefully people will start to respond and say, you know, like, because that's a retaliation. People are scared, well, I'll lose my job. Listen, they could take it. I'm, you know.
Right? That's what makes you dangerous,
that's
though.
That's right. Exactly.
It's like a kamikaze.
Exactly.
I'm going to die anyway, so I'm going to take you with me.
You
so, so now what?
Yeah, right. You know, but no, the point is that I'm not going to let them mistreat me. And so Keith is that way. Dr. Kamara is that way. And so they done ran into some Zulus up there.
We're going to take a short break. I don't know if you've been following this conversation, but Professor Tony Vandermeer and myself, we're on another level. If you're interested in education, whether you have kids or not, whether you're college educated or not, this is a matter of informing our people about justice and about what's right and doing what's right and what you can do to help support the educators of color, the black educators in a state, let me be clear. If you work in Massachusetts, your tax dollars are paying for it anyway. And so you need to find out what you're paying for. Don't go anywhere. We've got some more information for you on another level. Stay with us.
White student proceeded to take me from where I was, and he moved me to the center of the dance floor and said, dance the dance.
Racism is alive and well on college campuses across America. This isn't the age of legal segregation, but black students still don't feel welcome on U.S. campuses, and they're leading a growing protest campaign in response. Here are four issues students want addressed. WTFs are what some people call microaggressions. Basically, a quick negative comment or exchange made intentionally or unintentionally to someone from a marginalized group.
I remember taking my shower caddy into the shower one morning, getting ready for class, and someone looking into my shower caddy and saying, oh, is that shampoo? That's the same shampoo I use. And I said, yeah, you know, what about it? He said, well, I didn't think black people used shampoo.
The name suggests that these incidents aren't that big of a deal. Taken alone, maybe they're not. But over time, they create the sense that the person on the receiving end is different. That's why folks have taken to Twitter using the hashtag #BlackOnCampus. When being intelligent makes you not like the rest of them. Or when you're the only black student in class and asked, are you sure you're in the right class? And it's not just students who are speaking out. Black professors have also chimed in with their own experiences. Black on campus means that for 16 years, students still seem surprised to see me because they've never had a black professor. Around 15% of U.S. college students in the country are black, but only 6% of college faculty are. 79% of college faculty are white. In fact, there isn't a single state flagship university where the black faculty reaches 10%, and only a handful of them have more than 5%. Protesters want that change. They want more black professors and teachers on campuses. The idea is that having a more diverse faculty will help students fit in. It'll also help their demands to be heard. In the last 25 years, the number of black students on U.S. campuses has increased. But dropout rates remain disproportionately higher for black students compared to their white classmates. Only 21% of black college students graduate in 4 years, compared to roughly 43% of white students. Protesters want more support services for students, including more mental health workers of color, to provide the help they need to graduate. Many universities have a formal system for reporting racist incidents and hate crimes, but protesters say this isn't enough.
I think the main sentiment that is shared amongst students, black students across campuses, is apathy from administration.
A common demand is to have a chief diversity officer to make sure there's more diversity training and recruitment, to implement campus policies, and to respond to racial harassment. These students are risking grades, scholarships, and some have even faced death threats. 50 years after the Civil Rights Act, when will colleges create a safe and welcoming environment for black students?
Interested in becoming a radio DJ? Boston Neighborhood Network's 102.9 FM is offering a course of radio production that can get you started. For more information, please head over to bnnmedia.org/services/workshops.
The first black Supreme Court Justice, Surgeon General, and Vice President of the United States have more in common than making history. They all attended an HBCU. An HBCU is any historically black college or university established before 1964. The principal mission of the schools was and is to educate black Americans at a time when access to higher education was inaccessible for most. Even though historically black colleges and universities represent 3% of all colleges and universities, they produce 20% of all black college graduates in the United States. Today, there are 101 HBCUs located in 19 states, Washington, D.C., and the U.S. Virgin Islands. 70% of black dentists and physicians, 80% of black judges, and 25% of all black STEM degree holders earn degrees from HBCUs. HBCUs have always been open to students of all races, and they've gotten more diverse in recent years, with non-black students making up 24% of HBCU enrollment in 2018. While some HBCUs are thriving, many are facing hardships. Rising college costs, federal budget cuts, and the student loan crisis are deeply affecting HBCUs, where most students are low-income and first-generation college students. Since 1997, 15 HBCUs have had to close their doors. In 2019, Morehouse College, an all-male HBCU in Atlanta, made history when billionaire Robert F. Smith announced he would pay off the graduating class's student loans. The Biden administration has promised to pledge $70 billion towards HBCU funding.
And so we're back, and I hope you got some information, because the first clip was actually 8 years old. So when you're talking about 8 years ago, that's before the pandemic. And still, the information that was handed out is the same, if not worse, today. Mm-hmm. Underneath the pressure of the Supreme Court invalidating affirmative action, underneath the pressure of, you could blame the Republicans, but back in the day, most black people were Republicans until the 60s when the Republicans refused to support the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. And so black folks was like, okay, well, I'll become Democrats. But you forget that the White Citizens Council and the Ku Klux Klan were Democrats. So this is an election year. This is why I'm giving you this, this FYI, so that you can do something. Register to vote. Find out the issues to vote about, and then vote. Mm-hmm. And then influence other people to vote. Now you say, it doesn't really matter. That's not really important. Oh, really? Then why is so much voter suppression going on across this country when it comes to black people? Black people. Why? If it's not that important, then why do they keep trying to get you to not use it? I'm just saying. Register to vote so that you count. Then vote. And use it so that it's got some economic power. See, it's by any means necessary. I'm down with Malcolm, but I'm like any means necessary too. You gotta have some black Republicans, and you gotta have some black Democrats, and you gotta have some black independents, and you gotta have another party. This is a representative democracy, figure it out. Unless you want somebody who's a cold-blooded fascist dictator. And for those of you who are historians, by the way, you need to study Hitler, you need to study the Roman Empire. You need to study Greek Empire. I'm a historian, I love history, because it goes in cycles and it repeats itself. So the same conditions that produce Hitler, by the way, eugenics and that racial cleansing thing, the Nazis learned that from the United States. It wasn't the other way around. Like, we're looking at it now from what you've been taught from Hollywood and mistaught from schools, because all the curriculums include the Holocaust, the Jewish Holocaust, not the Black Holocaust. See, did you think you was gonna come here and feel all comfortable and it's like, oh, this is not edutainment. I'm not entertaining you. We're here to educate you. And amazing educator that I have here in the studio with me is Professor Tony Vandermeer. He's just a BA. For those of us who know what a BA is, right? B.A. King, Tony Vandermeer, educate us some more. There's a couple of black people, well, there's several black people, but you're one brother that I always try to include in the conversation. Joel McCall is another one. Mm-hmm. And you guys are so, you can rabble rounds if you want to, but you're just so even keel and so matter of fact. And those blowtorch things, yeah. like you're talking and then you feel it's like, oh, dang, that word that he just said, I kind of really felt that, right? So I always feel that when you speak. So thank you so much for coming back. And I told you before when we were talking about this a while ago, I needed you to come back because it's a marathon, like Nipsey Hussle said. This is not just a battle. Mm-hmm. This is a whole war, and it's a series of wars to win.
Yeah.
And what are we winning? When we win, we win black professors in the classroom. Yeah. But what does that really represent? What does that really mean?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. Basically, and it's hard to deal with, but we have to realize that we're still at war, right? But because of the way that it's dressed up now, it's very, people either don't want to see it or can't see it, but we have to uncover that.
Isn't it? It's painful though, because when our parents fled racial terrorism and my grandparents and stuff, I remember it was like pulling teeth to get them to talk about it because it was traumatic.
Yes.
So isn't there another generation that's gone through?
Well, it comes with responsibility. Right. It comes with sacrifice. And so, when you have videos of Ice Spice and Sexy Red on and people trying to put swimming pools in their living room, they're looking for those comforts and so forth, but not really understanding that is not necessarily going to make you happy or sad per se, but what are the conditions that we live in, our people live in. And even if we have comfort, what about our cousins and our aunts and uncles and our neighbors?
I ain't gonna lie, there's some cousins I don't care about. My mother had 16 brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
I'm still meeting cousins.
Yeah.
And some of them I know I wish I didn't know.
Right.
Sorry.
But that's in a human family. But still, when you go around, especially when you go out of the country or you go in other urban communities or in the South, you see the conditions that people are living. Even some places in Boston, you go like, what? Even you could go in some of these healthcare facilities and you go like some of these universities and be highly disappointed. But the question is that what is it that we want, right? And that we have
but
to fight for
that. But isn't
it
about being part of the human condition, which affects you whether you think it does or it doesn't, right?
Yeah, but you have to be conscious of that. That's the whole point. And part of what...
But wait a minute.
Yeah.
Let's break it down. And I'm calling this out because anybody who's in Boston, if you frequented South Bay at any given point in time of the last 10 years,
right.
You know the difference between able to go into the coffee shop inside of there and be able to sit down and there's no seats, there's no anything down in there.
Yeah.
And then going in there and trying to shop for certain things like shaving cream or underarm deodorant, and now it's in a plexiglass kind of separate section because it's
and
security.
You pay extra for that.
Right.
Right. Prices went up for that.
And if you can find it.
Right. But why did that happen? I remember going in the store and asking, it's because of the problems that was happening in mass and cast. And they're worrying about this question of addiction. And so they use that
they
to
were
jack,
stealing.
Well, they use that to jack prices up, right? But I'm saying is that they were, the question is that if you're desperate and you don't have what you need, what you going to do? You're going to go and get it.
Although, and also the Walgreens, series of Walgreens and Walmarts and stuff, they're closing. I'm sorry, Walgreens, you ain't paying me to say this, but you know, the stores that are closing in predominantly black and brown communities, right?
Yes.
And then we're not necessarily in the position to be able to pick up that slack at a cost that makes it affordable for the community.
But this is not by accident.
Oh, I know.
This is not by accident. You could go right now. I was at the cafe down in Nubian Square, sitting down, and there was a little brochure that was trying to make an announcement of selling a two-bedroom condominium for $900,000.
In
Roxbury, right up the street. So what I'm saying is that, what does that mean? Now, they're saying that it takes $125,000 to live in Boston.
Minimum, right? For a single person.
Right, so the issue is that there is the kind of gentrification that's going on. So all this is adding to that because we're not going to be able to live here anymore. That's how desperate it is.
But African-Americans, the demographic in Boston that has decreased more than anybody else from getting pushed out.
Yes.
And so when we talk about voting and stuff like that, you don't have that voting block because it's being pushed out to other places.
It's being decimated. But this is the urgency of now, right, that we have to begin to deal with. But wherever we are, we have to be organized. And we tend not to be organized because that's how we fight. You know, it's not just an individual. Like, for example, you know, I'm not fighting for myself. You understand? That would be a different piece, is that because those young black people and those young white people, those young Asian people who come in my class who are starting to see differently than what they saw, that's the issue because
then
they're going to challenge.
Yeah, that's why they want to get rid
of you. Exactly.
I mean, I know that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Make it plain.
Right.
And then
they're ready to get involved. Right, you know, after that. So it says, no, let's keep them asleep, right? And let's put Vandermeer asleep, right?
And
Kamara, and, you know, and Jones, right? And so forth. So, but we have to support, you know, people who are willing to stand up, but because you become a dangerous model, a dangerous example.
Let me tell you something. When I was protesting, and I'm not gonna name the place because I had to sign an NDA, and that's another way of trying to silence you, right? And that's how Black Teachers Matter came into fruition. I was fighting for my job, but I wasn't just fighting for mine as a black teacher.
Right.
And so I saw black teachers in that institution who were dogging me every day. And all of a sudden, when I took a stand, they're not even saying hello.
Right.
It's a lonely
place. Environment. It creates a hostile environment. And they create a whisper campaign on you, and that's
no,
what happens.
No, it was out loud.
Yeah.
But the teachers, I mean, not the teachers, the parents and the students were with me.
Yeah.
And they protested even before I did.
Right.
And then when they found it was me, because of the bond that I had with them, they stood in solidarity.
Right.
When there are people in the system that were too afraid.
You know, as you say, as being Harriet, you know, is that when some folks was on the plantation and say, I'm trying to get out of here, let's go. I said, well, what are you talking about going out?
Hold on, her first husband was free, and when she wanted to go, he's like, no, I'm cool.
Right, you know, and so the point is that because they are scared. Now, we got to understand that we have to understand the psychology of oppression, right? Because it's our task to try to change that. And we got to be careful to the point because we end up blaming them more than the people who are doing it. So it's like, you okay, later, right? But the point is that we have to, that's why they used to have palenques and you know, where folks ran into the bush and created their communities and tried to do that. That's right. So it's a difficult task, but that's the task for us. That's the challenge for us that we have to do.
Okay, let's look at history and try to apply it. It kind of applies, but it doesn't apply. The British wanted to come into China and get China to trade. China was like, nah, we cool. We don't need you. Mm-hmm. Well, we wanted the British, Europeans, but we see your spices and you got silk and, ooh, you got gunpowder and you got this. So maybe we got something. Nah, we cool. We've been here for thousands of years. We already dealt with the cons and all this other stuff. And, you know, so nah, we smell you. We know you ain't right. Mm-hmm. So nah, we got this wall, you know, against the hordes. And so we gonna use it against you too. Then the British dropped opium, drugged them up. In America, government drops crack cocaine and heroin, drugged them up, right? Weaken the borders. Now, here's my point. When China, albeit brutal, decided we're going to get rid of the drugs and everything because we got to get our society right, they lined people up and just started killing them.
Yeah.
And then I remember growing up, and the cheapest products, you would say, oh, that was made in China. That's not the same case now.
Yeah, yeah.
So within a lifetime, you've seen a society that couldn't feed its people to now being one of the world dominant powers.
Yeah.
Extreme measures, but look at the results.
See, they
do we have to be as extreme with black people?
No. I think that, you know, we have to find a different approach, a more reparative and restorative approach. But doesn't mean that it's soft.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that it's soft, right? Because we don't want to become who they are.
Which is?
When I say, you know, people who just take folk out.
A brutal regime.
That's right.
That
right.
Snatches human rights.
That's right. That's right. And the point is that all of us, is that when you're born, there's one thing that's certain, you're going to die.
True.
And we don't know when.
You don't know when.
Right.
Or how.
Right. And so even if we do something today, what is it going to be like tomorrow? And so it's continuous, right? So everybody's going to have to struggle, but we try to create the best that we can while we're here and even for the future.
Well, see, that part right there, I think, observing in our lifetimes, that we have lost that sense of continuum and lost that sense of responsibility to our ancestors and the people that come behind.
Well, I would say
there's a break.
I would say we didn't lose it. I would say that they stole it. They took. They created.
They can't steal.
They created the conditions.
Oh,
You see what I'm saying? You know, they're the ones who dropped the heroin.
But hold up. My father told us when we were really young.
Yeah.
Someone can treat you like a dog, but it's up to you to act like.
Exactly. But that's the internalized oppression. That's what many people know as being a dog. They don't know they're human. That's what you're trying to get.
But anybody who's had a dog, who's had to train a dog, the dog goes to bite you, you kick him in the teeth.
Yeah.
It's not like, I mean, you do the carrot and the, you know, you have the little, come on, you know, fluffy, da-da-da. And then when they don't do it and they go to bite you, you boom, you know, you get them, right?
Right.
So where is that balance in the black community?
Right, but this is the point of national consciousness. Right, you know that.
But if we're not the ones that are teaching, which is what you're fighting for now, then how do we get that?
Exactly. Well, you know, sometimes the conditions were shifted. That was Malcolm X. It took the conditions, you know, for him to be in those conditions, for him to go to prison and then rediscover himself.
And reading to the
That's
point
right.
where he lost his eyesight.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Rediscover himself and so forth. And so what I'm saying is that these conditions, the conditions, makes us revolutionary.
True.
Right,
and you don't find a reason to change.
And the conditions will, as long as they exist, the longer they're going to produce another Malcolm X, another Harriet Tubman. You understand?
I don't see them. I see more kids depending on. No, wait a minute. That's not true.
Yeah.
I do see them.
Yeah.
But what I see is, and this, I don't see as many elders. I remember mentors and elders that were like, "You can do it like that, but maybe you want to think like this."
But we're also in a different level, and so this is why we have to be careful, because. All the people who have processed hair, don't mean they're reactionary. All the people who have afros don't mean they're revolutionary.
Oh, who are you telling? Every brother ain't a brother.
That's right.
And every sister. And all skin folk ain't kinfolk.
That's right. So what I'm saying is that, you know, you people are going to play those roles. So you have to, how we judge and how we look at, because it's, you know, like, let me, for example.
But you got to, like with any parent, good parent, you know, before you bring that baby home, you baby-proof your home, right? You put certain things in the
electrical,
as much as you can.
That's right. As much
right?
as you
as
can.
Much as you can.
Yeah.
And I don't see that same level of stewardship because of the fact that.
Well, the conditions, again, the conditions have changed. We're in a different moment, but it is there. But we've also been overwhelmed. We have to understand, you know, the telephone, the social media, the you got 3-year-olds crying because not they can want a cookie, they want the telephone, right? You know, so it's understanding that shift and now how we have to deal with it. And then they have thrown so much, you know, sort of at us. Then you know, it was a lot clearer. You know, before, and then, even then, for some people, that wasn't clear enough.
True. And when I think about, we only have like, because you and I could talk forever. I remember, and I hated it when it was happening. My father only allowed us to watch an hour of television. Yeah. And that's when we only had 3 channels, right? Yeah. And it didn't stay on 24 hours.
Right.
We could only watch an hour of television. Yeah. And even within that hour, there were certain things that we couldn't watch.
Yeah.
He said, I didn't have any dummies. Yeah. I'm not raising any dummies. Yeah. Now I hated it because you'd go to school and everybody else is talking about these popular shows. And so, you know, you don't know and you feel isolated.
Right. The biggest struggle for us is to unlearn things.
Or to not let them in the first place with those guardrails.
Right, but the thing is that this is what imperialism is. It's all over. It's wherever you go. Right. And so that's why your own ideological development is important so that when it comes, you know, but you can do it in such a way, right, that you are conscious of what's going on. And then if other people are doing this, there's something wrong with them. Right. Mm-hmm. Why are you see? So but we have to train communities of people.
Right.
To be able to understand, to be able to differentiate.
All levels.
That's right. And this is why education is important. Right. Because that's why the threat is, because now we're trying to get people how to deal with making analysis and think critically and raise stuff and raise questions, right? You got a university, you got people who got 2 PhDs don't know how to ask a real good question about their conditions.
You got people with 2 and 3 PhDs that are teachers that can't teach their way out of a paper bag.
Exactly, because it's about research and not teaching. They don't make a good PhD. The teaching of the PhD is research. So many of them are horrible teachers.
They are.
Right, and there are good teachers there. I got some good colleagues, you know. But the point is that they keep giving you some cheese, and you know, right? So, but it's on us, right, to shift that, you know. And it doesn't take many, but it takes a good example,
consistent,
yes,
good example, mm-mm, at all levels,
yes,
and to be open, I think, for, you know, to understand your position in terms of the whole. I won't say game, but the whole mosaic of all the pieces that are needed in organizing, right?
Yes.
Because sometimes we're so busy surviving and fighting that we forget there's people attached to us that are watching us make these moves.
Yes.
And so the younger generation, you know, I'm still kind of blown away. No, I'm still very blown away at the students that still remember me.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I have taught hundreds of students, right?
Yes.
But there's certain ones you connect with. And as a teacher, you throw a lot of stuff at the wall, and you're hoping most of it sticks, but you kind of know they might have missed that one. I may have to go back and do that one again.
Yeah.
But then when you've influenced people, you don't really know until they go away and you come back. You and I have been teaching for decades.
Yeah.
And then when these kids are no longer kids and they have kids and they come back and tell you, then it's like, oh.
Yeah, no, you're planting seeds. You know,
and hoping somebody else doesn't.
That's right. And the conditions blossom. And now they got to go and do the independent work. They go like, wait a minute. I remember, you know, Professor Hillman was saying something. And let me go. What was that book again? Souls of Black Folks? What?
Now you get a thing.
Right.
And you can see it when it happens
in
class.
The light bulb goes on and you
can't turn it out.
You just go ahead. You just
once you squeeze the toothpaste out, it ain't going back in.
That's right, right. But we also have to understand that our struggle is not an overnight sensation. It's a protracted struggle. It's long term. And so we have to be looking at generations.
So in generations, right now, say it again, how do we support having the Africana Studies Department at UMass Boston not only be an entity there, remain an entity there, but an effective entity?
Yes. It is the people that is going to do that. It is, you know, is students, it's their families, it's the community folks, you know, to be able to begin to call on their elected officials, mm-hmm. right? A call on the people in charge, because UMass is accountable to the people. They're accountable to Massachusetts.
Taxiers.
Right. And so to call a state representative, to call the governor and say, how's that possible in Massachusetts? Mm. They have to express their outrage to deal with that. But if they don't, then it only weakens them. It only weakens our community. Right? They have to be accountable to us, and they're not. And they have to be transparent to us, and they're not. Right. And so we have to be able to say, you know, is that me? Call them up. Say, like, I'm, you know, like, mighty men, why is that happening under your watch? So Governor, why is that happening under your watch?
Is there a website or a number that people can call for more information, or?
We have put out some stuff. We haven't put out a website. The students have put out at one point, you know, a website that we're trying to get people to organize. And there's some new organizing going now, too. Okay. So that's going to, you know, develop. But it's just simple. I mean, you know, you could call, think they're operators now, but you could probably go on, you could look that up and say, right? Right? No. It's like, what's Marty Meehan's number? What's the governor's number?
Oh, you can Google that. Yeah.
Right, right. What's the state rep's number? What's the our congressional rep's number? Right? You have to push them. And so and you, it doesn't have to be a lot of people. It has to be enough people, because, see, they are politicians.
Yes.
And they realize that if I don't get 50 plus one on the vote, I ain't getting back in.
Right.
Right.
And that affects the bottom line, my money.
That's right. Right. So we have to be able to make that an issue. Just like, you know, the people who are doing around what's happening in Gaza, right? We have to speak truth to power.
Don't stop that one. We got a minute left.
Right.
Now. That'll be another whole conversation.
Right. We got to speak truth to power. Right. That's our task.
And realize we have power.
Right. That's right.
Hold on for a second, because there's two, and we're gonna wrap this up. There are two flyers that I sent in. There is a hip hop art symposium that's happening tomorrow, and then there's a hip hop symposium on Saturday at Massasoit Community College. If you guys can put that up really quickly. The Breaking the Mold Hip Hop Art Show, which is tomorrow, April 24th, at Massasoit Community College. And there's also the other program, there it is, the Hip Hop Symposium in Massasoit Community College. I'm actually—
That's 50 years.
That's 50 years, man. I don't want to even think of that old to remember that. But and so you can find more information. Hopefully you guys show up. Hip hop, you're talking about revolution. We've influenced the whole world, period.
Yes.
I've seen Bollywood movies where they're doing Michael Jackson and where they're doing, you know, rap and everything.
Yeah.
And we're going to wrap it up and say thank you again. Mm-hmm. This is a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And we are with you. I'm with you.
Thank you.
And any kind of information you can give so we can put out there.
Sure.
And I'm inviting you to Black Teachers Matter and WBCA 102.9 FM. Oh, Kim Janey, that's right, I forgot about that one. First woman, first Black mayor of Boston. There's also another, she's visiting professor at the Robert Woods presentation, and you can scan that and get more information about that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff going on. We have an important job here at BNN Media, informing the community, and we're from the community. And we're not just telling you so you sit there and you know. We're telling you so that you can do something about it and bring your consciousness, your information, your neighbors, your friends, your family, yourself to another level. I want to thank you for being here. Thank you, Professor Tony Vandermeer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Stay tuned to BNN Media. You, too, can become a producer. Don't just sit there like you're just watching television. You can make television. Thank you. Take care of yourself. God bless.
As America's civil rights mascot. On this day, you'll have folks who would have never in their life marched with, agreed with, voted with anything he believed in. One of the biggest in the United States Congress. He had the audacity to send out a Dr. King quote.
The march has begun. Every day we rise like the sun. We fight till the battle is won. Can you hear the footsteps? Listen, cause we're coming like a gang on the street, so you better start running. It's time for some action now. Historical progression, generations march in succession. Through 400 years, hate, blood, sweat, and tears, and counting. The resistance is mounting.
Watch and resist, pump your fist, throw your hands in the air just like this.
We are the writers, and not the generation of fighters. When it gets hard, we charge.
Don't test and resist.
And that's it.
generation of fighters. We don't quit, we hit.
Don't get it twisted. Black women insisted. Show the world how they resisted.